I would love to have more long-term clients so that maybe it's closer to 80%, 75 or 80%. However, I like the idea of having that spot open for a short-term project. And yes, something fresh, things change with the clients, or we change where we're not a good fit for them anymore.
From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about long-term client relationships with Susan Snipes. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
Today's episode is sponsored by Fostermade, a versatile web development agency specializing in custom application development, content management systems, and user experience design. Through partnerships with designers, agencies, and organizations, Fostermade is committed to building better digital experiences. Visit fostermade.co to learn more. This episode is also sponsored by Wix. Every great business needs a stunning website. With Wix.com, it's easier than ever to create yours. With all the things you need to look amazing online, images, videos, and professional text. And the best part is, you can do all on your own. So, what are you waiting for?
Today, we are talking about a subject dear to our hearts, client relationships, specifically long-term client relationships. And joining us is Susan Snipes, who is founder and president of Q Digital Studio, a web design and development shop in Denver, Colorado. She used to do lots of design and front-end dev, but now she focuses on developing business strategies, helping her team solve problems, and of course, building client relationships. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Susan, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
I would love to. I have been in Denver for since 2002, coming here from the Midwest, and I love Denver. It's the place where I was always meant to be, and I plan to be here for a long time. So here in Denver, besides running this studio, I have a couple of little girls and have a do a lot of the Colorado things here, like to spend time outdoors when I'm not working, of course. So doing hikes. I'm also interested in taking care of my little garden when the weather is nice again, which I'm looking forward to soon. And probably the other things that I like to do are read science fiction and occasionally watch a little TV.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm getting into some gardening myself this spring. We're going to try and do a vegetable garden for the first time, so it's all a new experiment.
I think tomatoes work well in this climate, so that's my recommendation.
Well, if I get a lot of tomatoes, I'll be a happy person because I could eat those for every meal. So how did you first get into the web?
I first got into it many, many years ago when I was in college in the 90s. I took one single web class. At the time, it was a combination of HTML and Photoshop, and I think it was like 8 weeks. It was all that there was at the time. And I was at a school where I was around a lot of engineers, and they were really into the web. I think, I don't even remember exactly what it was called then, but that was when Netscape Navigator was first coming out.
Nice.
And so you could actually like look at stuff, and everyone was like, oh, it's so cool. And I was like, I guess that's kind of cool. I mean, that's kind of interesting. But I was coming at it from the art side, so I liked creating things. Mm. And so after I took that first class and learned, however, you know, the 5 or 10 HTML tags that existed back then, I was one of those people that could design websites. And we were definitely web designers back then. No front-end developers or anything like that. And when I was done with my undergraduate degree, I wasn't really interested in continuing on with what my degree was, which was architecture and art history. And I was totally employable doing web design, and I got my first job as a web designer in 1999 and kept doing it since then.
Wow, yeah. I'm just remembering my own first classes and stuff that I took and how limited they were and what the tools were. And it was, you know, I think my first jobs, I was a webmaster, even though I did do code and things like that.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
I love those old terms.
Yeah, exactly.
Webmaster.
Dating ourselves. So anyway, Susan, you're now leading this company. Over the years, you've probably gained a sense of what a good client relationship is. Can you share what that looks like, you know, to you as the person running, leading the company, as well as the people on your team?
That is a great question. And I like to think that our client relationships at this point, now that we've been in business for a while, are either good or great or excellent. So that typically looks like having a client that respects us and treats us well and is working with us and asking us our opinions. So working with us and interested in our expertise. They would typically come to us with a problem rather than a solution. And it's always nice when they pay appropriately and on time. Those are really nice clients. And some of the other things that we have been paying more attention to recently are that they're using more of our skills. So rather than just working with us on design or front-end development or content management systems or one of those tools, that they're using more of our skills.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, here at Q, our clients do work with an account manager, which is me or one other person on the team, and they also interact with our team. So having them be thoughtful in communicating with their account manager as well as the rest of the team mm-hmm. is important. We have had clients, well, just one client in the past, a long time ago, who did not treat one of my team members well, so that client did not get to stay.
Mm-hmm.
So respect is probably one of the biggest ones, and working strategically and together on projects is another thing that's, I think, makes a great client.
Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me that, I mean, that's pretty much, I think, how Leia and I define our most ideal client relationships, but they often evolve to that.
Yes.
Particularly the point, I think, about, well, a couple of the points, like about being strategic. Like, I can think about one of our clients who has gotten more strategic with her business and therefore has gotten more strategic with us, but in the beginning wasn't so much. And on some level, it was a risk taking the relationship, but it's turned out to be one of our better relationships. How do you gauge if that's where it's going to go?
That's a great question. I think sometimes you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a client will already have gotten to that point where they are ready to think about strategy and also entrust me or you with that strategy and do that together. And other clients aren't there. We certainly have clients that we would work on for a single project, and they're still a great client and it's a great project, but that's the duration. They just don't have the mm-hmm. capacity, I suppose, or they're not really there yet with their mm-hmm. project. Or maybe it only needs to be a short-term project. If it's a 3-month event, then mm-hmm. there's not much strategy that needs to go beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I definitely want to talk a little bit about the differences between projects and clients, but let's take a step back. What would you consider a long-term client? Like, how long would the relationship have to be?
I would probably say, for me to count it as a long-term client, 1 year or more.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we have a rule here where if we've worked with someone for 6 months, they're a short-term client, and longer mm-hmm. than that, long-term client. For the ones that I would count in on or consider here as long-term clients, we've worked with them for a year or more, or mm-hmm. we have an agreement that we're working for that long together.
It occurs to me that on some level, I mean, I completely agree with probably that year time frame, but there have also been a couple client relationships where even before that year mark, for example, they already felt like a long-term client because we managed to do one project and there was no really expectation for anything beyond that. But then because needs changed, kept coming to us throughout like a year. And then, by the 6-month point, we'd done so much, it felt like a long-term engagement.
Totally.
Even though it was like a combination of like, quote unquote, small projects.
So, I mean, would that count? Like, is repeat business just in and of itself a long-term client?
I would say yes, if it's the same client.
Yeah.
And also with the intention that you would like to keep working together.
Mm-hmm. Like it's like a signal that that's where it's going.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about the specific strategy for taking a good project relationship to a long-term client relationship, because long-term is exactly that. It takes time. So how does a relationship with a client evolve for you, Susan?
So I think there's two things that happen to us with us for prospective clients now. One is, surprisingly, a lot more clients come to us saying that they're looking for a long-term partner. So that's easy. So that's awesome. For the ones that don't necessarily know if they are or not, and specifically have the project where they're looking for someone that can do a good job and build this site for them, we would evaluate whether or not we think it's a project, which in that case, sometimes projects are a great fit for where we are and what our availability is, or if we think they might be good for a long-term partnership. And at that point, I kind of feel them out. I've had a lot of practice working with clients, and I don't want to scare them off and say, well, we only work with clients that are going to commit to working with us for a year. I would rather do something like a small project where we can evaluate if we would like to work together. And I typically would say the same thing to them, like, we would like to work with you long term. How about if we try a smaller project together? This works really well for a website that we might be inheriting where they want to upgrade or a redesign or whatever it might be, where that's a big commitment, even if it is only a project, where I'd like to make sure that we can truly help them and that we'd like to work with them. I'm sure the same for them. If they're investing a lot of money, it's nice to try that with a small bit first and make sure it works.
Yeah, I would say for Bright Umbrella, when we first started taking clients, I don't know if Emily and I were strategic at all about making them into long-term clients. It's just, as long as they kept asking us to do work, we just continued doing it. But for the past couple of years, Emily and I have been trying to be intentional over maintaining this relationship and making sure, you know, everyone is pretty happy. So, you know, for us, we tend to actually have to-do lists of like post-project check-ins and creating lists of resources we can send to them that actually would help their business in some way. So they always understand that we have their best interests in mind. Does Q have something similar in terms of process and strategy of actual actions to take that relationship to be more long term?
That's a great question. We have some things that we do and some things that we are starting to do and add into that role. For example, we have a newsletter that we send out to current and prospective clients that we try to share information that we think is useful for our clients regularly and send that out to them as well, because I know they don't always look at our website, even though they should. So we can let them know what we're working on or what we're thinking about that would help them. And that's just from the kind of fun side of things. As far as regular updates for clients that we have worked with on a single project, we do have regular check-ins that the account manager would schedule, depending on the size of the client, whether that's every month or every quarter, if they're not doing active work. And that is to give them a site update where we would run like a mini assessment, let them know how their site's doing, if it needs an upgrade, if they have broken links, how their SEO looks, those kinds of things, just to let them know we're here to help them. And we also have taken the approach that we don't want to pressure them. So I suppose we're still refining that, where I'd love to have them, you know, be as engaged as possible, but also be realistic about what makes sense for them.
I think one of the things that we've found to be useful to sort of, because I think part of, for us, we have that same concern about not being pushy or salesy or anything like that with any of our client or even prospect relationships. But I think one of the things we've learned to sort of help us get more comfortable with it and shape how we engage after a project is we're really generous. We focus on being generous, like what Leia was describing. Like, we have a newsletter and our clients get signed up for that, you know, by virtue of signing on with us. And, you know, beyond that, though, who knows if they always read them, but we do like Leia said, you know, reach out to them one-on-one with I saw this article, I think it might make sense for you. It's just, we're always thinking of you. This has nothing to do with our business or what we're doing or us trying to do sales. We're thinking about you, and we thought this would be useful, kind of thing. That sort of attitude and approach. But I love your idea about doing a little mini needs assessment, maybe, you know, once a year, every 6 months or something like that, as a good sales tool as well, because that's generous, but also helps further the business.
And I love that word generous. That's how I feel about the client relationships. And to give a little means a lot to them.
So in regards to that needs assessment, is that basically you do that kind of for free, right?
We do.
That's interesting. Interesting.
Smart, though. You already have their system. You know what they have. So it's probably comparatively easy to evaluate versus like a cold prospect.
Absolutely. And it is small and it's targeted to what they need, just as you were saying. And we would call it a mini assessment because it's not going to be like a comprehensive site audit, but it's just touching on the high level things. And if some of those are ones that we already know, are there pain points or things that they had, you know, on the horizon for the future, there it's really helpful to touch back on. And also, a lot of them wouldn't really know certain things they should be paying attention to, like the recent Google change with the security warnings and that kind of stuff. You know, people were like, oh, do I need to do something? And just to let them know whether or not they should worry about it and when they should worry about it.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's something that in a lot of ways we could consider ourselves, Leah. I think it's would be something that would be easy to do, but also very relevant. A nice
little mini assessment.
Totally. You know, I really love the idea, and especially what Susan, you said about, you know, Leah, it's essentially what we do for our retainer clients. Like our retainer clients who are paying for our time, we are constantly like, oh, you know, this thing came out. We'd like to do this. Is that okay? Is that, you know, where you'd like us to spend your time? We're always proactive thinking about that in a bigger sense as part of essentially your sales / business development process.
That's exactly right. It is like something we would do for a retainer client as well, but for the non-retainer clients.
Right.
Sure. So in regards to all of this, we've been talking a little bit about how to reach out to clients so that we're top of mind and that they understand we're helping us. How about the clients that are already with you? Do they explain any reason why they stay with your company for so long? Or is it just speculative? Like, what are the key reasons clients stay with a company?
I have not asked them, and I probably should. However, if I were to speculate, I would say a few things that I have heard before are that they love working with us. And some of the reasons that they love that are that we're responsive and organized and we listen to them.
Yeah,
I know that sounds kind of like it should be obvious, but
not
everyone can do that.
I think that's our differentiator too. That is exactly what we hear most from our long-term clients. It's because we communicate well, we're really organized, they can count on us. Like, it's not, they're the best designers and developers. I mean, we are, but you know, that's not why they're staying with us. You know, that's not why they turn to us for those questions. It's the thing that you think is obvious, but I don't think it has been traditionally in our field, a very client-focused, relationship-focused kind of business.
Agreed. I think it has been missing from our field.
And I just, as an aside, in terms of like asking your clients, like, well, why are you staying with them? You know, it's pretty easy to ask them when you just simply ask for a testimonial.
Totally.
You know, after a project, you just need to be very specific in your testimonial questions and basically say, hey, these are the types of things I want to know. And perhaps you can add this in your testimonial. And in regards to that, a lot of our clients say very similar things, as in, these people are reliable. And they seem to want to understand our needs as opposed to just fitting a solution before even understanding what the question is.
Yes.
I'm curious, are all of your clients long-term, or do you have, you know, just a mix of some who you've done a project with and that was sort of it?
We have a mix. They are probably more long-term, I would say 60%, and then the rest are short term, or that we've done a project and we may work with them again, but I don't know that I'd technically call them long term, even if we worked with them a year ago and they might need something again this year.
Mm-hmm. You know, it occurs to me, this isn't something I had thought of prior to this, but from a business perspective, I guess in terms of management, would it be like best to have all long-term clients so you don't even have to seek new business? Or is there always sort of a need to do that?
I think there's always a need, but I think it would be less.
Yeah.
I would love to have more long-term clients so that maybe it's closer to 80%, 75 mm-hmm. or 80%. However, I like the idea of having that spot fresh. Open for a short-term project. And yes, something fresh, things change with clients, or we change where we're not a good fit for them anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's a good point, because sometimes clients that, especially when we were talking about our, I think it was in some of our business episodes, some clients you need to end the relationship, not necessarily even because they don't respect you or something like that. It's just that their needs are no longer something that you can do. You know, you can't answer their needs as well as you did in the past. Or in regards to you yourself as a business shifting your priorities, say you've decided you wanted to pursue a particular sector or industry instead, and theirs just don't necessarily fit that anymore. And then in regards to time management, et cetera, and so forth, it just doesn't make, you know, any sense. And if all you did was focus on only long-term client relationships, you could potentially be keeping relationships that you shouldn't necessarily keep.
Yeah,
agreed. I think the stimulation of having that variety is also really right. good, because, well, technology changes quickly, and it's mm-hmm. nice to be exposed to other new things people are doing instead of relying on that all internally.
So, Susan, is there ever a reason not to pursue a long-term client relationship? In fact, Dan Moll on his Super Friendly website specifically says that they don't want to take on long-term client relationships. That's not an ideal fit for them.
I think that's a great example pointing to whether or not it's a fit for someone's business and their core values or their mission or however they would like to define it, because we are more interested in sustainable long-term mm-hmm. partnership with someone, whereas projects are fun and solving those kinds of creative challenges is of interest to us. But, well, I shouldn't say what I don't know what Dan Moll's mission is, but based on the kinds of work he does and projects he does and his whole philosophy of how he assembles teams is very different than ours, which is focused on having a core team mm-hmm. that can work right. with the client. Mm-hmm. So I think depending on a company's goals and philosophy, maybe long-term projects are never fit.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the perspective is, especially if you are, let's say they're a giant corporation with an in-house team. Mm-hmm. So they already have particular skill sets involved there, but they want to have an expert outside opinion with specialties to parachute in for specific projects. If that's like the type of clients mm-hmm. that you have, yeah, it probably doesn't make sense to have a long-term client relationship, because you'll never necessarily have that. Sometimes you're hired simply to teach their internal team to do the work you're doing, mm-hmm. and then you disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, and then it may be obvious, but I will state it. There's also the reason to not pursue a long-term relationship with a client is if the relationship sours, you know, right. like is always rare, but it has happened where the project even went fine, but it just didn't gel. There was just something not right about it. And, you know, though it was like aligned with our industry goals and this, that, and the other, there was just something about it that we just didn't want to continue. And it ended fine because it just ended when the project ended. You know, when the project launched or closed out, then that was kind of it. We did not pursue it. We don't send check-ins or generous right. resource shares to that particular relationship.
Well, I find it also tricky sometimes when there's turnover inside
yes,
a particular,
that's so true.
You know, client relationship. So you can have like super long-term, excellent client relationships with respect and money paid on time. But if there is a leadership turnover where the values no longer align, then that might be a reason why you would have to end that particular relationship. And that's something that's not necessarily in your control.
Mm-hmm.
that it's quite common, I think, where with any relationship, I mean, this is a relationship and it is very much with your main contact or that core team. So if we're working with the marketing director and they move to another company, we might end up working with them at the other company and the new marketing director has their own people they want to work with.
Right.
Yeah. There's no guarantees in any of it. I think you just have to. I do think what we've learned is Leigh and I do like to have those conversations about where we think the relationship is. Every 2 weeks, Leigh and I check in for a couple hours and we go through everything and it all starts with our clients. And that's, we sort of talk about where we are, what we're doing, how we're feeling, and is anything we need to shift or adjust or bring up or whatever. So we're constantly checking in on it. And I think we've gotten better that when we do start to notice, you know, that it's a problem, we don't hold on to it. You know, we don't try and keep, you know, a relationship going just because in the past it was good.
Right.
I think that's a really good point. I have a tendency to like to solve problems. So now... If I see something's going wrong, or I shouldn't say wrong, but it's not quite as fluid of a fit, or, you know, there's a gap there, I would have a tendency to want to push that. And I think having a partner, in my case, we have an account manager here who can, I can bounce that off of and be like, well, let's not really invest more time here than we need to. So it's great to have that counterpoint.
Or the opposite as well, because sometimes there could be a situation where you feel uncomfortable because of a particular interaction that wasn't that great. But then, you know, if somebody else has a different perspective in regards to a more long-term view or an objective view because they weren't part of that particular interaction, then perhaps it could be another chance to have just essentially another chance to see like whether it's worth, you know, pursuing or fixing the problem. Because we've had that too, where we're all human. So not everything happens in like this perfect, you know, everybody says the right thing at the right time and does the right thing. And sometimes, especially as web workers, and even right now, like you can't see my face. It's hard to gauge sometimes tone of voice and things like that. So people could accidentally read into something that isn't even there. So having someone to bounce that kind of off. The other thing too, like in regards to, you know, leadership turnover and other things, and sometimes you're working primarily with, you know, a marketing team, sometimes there's like an unknown unknown. So they're working to, as the agency with this relationship, trying to alleviate that unknown and seeing who's influencing your core team can really help, because at least with one particular partner issue that we had, and they're a long-term partner and everything's great, but there were a couple of issues that we were confused over what was going on. And then once we actually got contact with a different person in the company that was influencing our main contact, and we spoke to that person directly, everything was resolved, you know, like just immediately resolved. So it was just trying to take that little bit of extra, you know, effort to see like, well, what is going on, you know, over here? And somebody else is talking to our main contact and confusing things, right? So let's see who that person is and let's see if we could have a, you know, civil conversation. And in the end, most people are, you know, there are like motivations that aren't nefarious. It's just the miscommunication. So
absolutely.
And I think even more with the example you're talking about, Leigh, I feel like that proactive approach on our part really... Our contact knew who we were and that we were reliable and a resource, but then we were then an established resource for this IT department. So now we're in two departments, we now are trusted and feel like they can come to us with what they need, which meant they spent more money with us.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent. I really like your choice of that word proactive and seeing those kinds of gaps or holes, because most of the work that we do is also remote where we have phone calls, but we don't even necessarily have video shares where we see each other's faces. And even a phone call can go a long way to addressing those and making that connection again. I love the idea of finding out who the other players are. And I think for any decent client relationship, if it's not possible to intuit that, it's easy enough to ask, like, who else is right. involved in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who else can we add to our project management system so they get the same emails so that mm-hmm. it's no longer playing telephone where somebody said something, they all get the same message at the mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah. So yes. are there any other red flags that you've seen in the past, Susan, or not even a red flag, just a flag that says it may be time to let go of this long-term client relationship?
Yes, there are the red flags. We've talked about some of those. Some of the ones we didn't talk about are maybe some obvious ones, like not paying their invoices or paying them very late or causing you to wonder if something is problematic there. When communication drops off, so even when you're trying to reengage and someone is mm-hmm. not communicating with you, something may be going on with our main contact. Maybe they're thinking about leaving or maybe they're thinking about hiring someone else. So those kinds of changes are probably the biggest areas for concern that something may be changing. Mm-hmm. And may when those red flags come up again with that proactive conversation, I can find out or you can find out, is something going on? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's out of our control and there's not anything we can do about it, but it's better to know that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use another color. Like, I don't know if it's like a checkered flag or a yellow flag or some other color for like the non-red ones. I don't know that it's super clear, but I believe there can come a time when it's time to move on. And I would say if we're not adding value to their project or their website mm-hmm. anymore, and maybe we've outgrown them, or as we were talking about earlier, our focus has changed, or maybe their focus has changed and it just doesn't make sense. And I don't want people to invest money in something that we're not truly helping them with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I also think there's a finite amount of time that makes sense to work with a client. And other people say different things. One of the my favorite business advisors, who I don't personally know, but who I love to read his stuff, David Baker, who has the website Recourses, he talks a lot about natural duration of a partnership being around 3 years. And we have some clients that we've worked with longer than that. But I also feel like after a certain amount of time, if they're growing and we're growing and we're growing together, then we can continue to work longer than that. However, if they're staying where they are or we're staying where we are, which hopefully we're not, we always want to keep growing, but we just aren't headed the same direction anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. That makes sense. Well, I'm curious though, like if your company is heading in a different direction, but let's say you still feel like your client is still a good fit. And by that, I mean, you know, a different direction, like raising your rates or mm-hmm. changing the services with this client that you still do believe will benefit them. How do you handle those company changes with a client to and then maintain that relationship?
Ooh, it's tricky. For some of the clients that we work with extremely closely, where we're on like a monthly retainer type relationship, it's a lot easier because we're in close enough sync that whatever changes we are changing, they're fully aware of what they are. For the ones where we might not work as frequently and as often, that's trickier. In the past, we've done a few different things. And I think what I have found works the best is to offer them their like grandfathered in rate package, or to offer them something that is their like special rate, while still being a rate that works for us. Knowing that if we did not get to keep them as a client, it would be okay. And that has to be something where we would be okay with them not agreeing to our rate. And actually, I don't even, that whole section I just said, I don't even know what I was saying.
I think it's a hard question. I think that's why. And I think right. it's a problem in our industry to talk about pricing and money and raising your rates. You know, we talked about it with Brad Weaver last year about how to price your business, but we didn't actually continue the conversation about how you have that talk with your client. Yes. But, you know, I think it's interesting. I think ultimately there is a cap at which we won't exceed. I mean, Leah's in charge of the money side of the business, so she may disagree with me. But in my head, I do feel like it's not like we could ever charge like $900 an hour. Like, that just doesn't seem right. realistic in any way. But in terms of like if you're dealing with rates, we have found a couple things that were successful for those conversations. And I think part of it was also trying to evolve the conversation beyond what our quote unquote hourly rate was and more about like what they could get if they did this with us kind of thing, like the value right. that they're getting for what we're working with. But with one of our long-term clients, once Leah and I partnered, we had to, you know, increase the rates for the business because expenses increased and requirements for running the business increased. And frankly, our expertise doubled. And what we were bringing to the table was more valuable. So having those conversations, that was kind of the way we tried to talk about it. Was we haven't raised rates in this many years, and this is a natural increase. And we'd like to offer you, you know, special discount because of, you know, whatever. And I don't even think
but
we
don't
call
use
it
the
a
word
discount.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
exactly.
not because it devalues our
discount.
Work, but yeah, it's more yeah. like this. I don't know, Leah, you talk about this.
This is our loyalty rate.
Loyalty rate.
Yeah. Yes. So we just say that this is our loyalty rate because you've been working with us. We charge our new clients this. So we give them the other number, which is the quote real rate for sure. Like if there is a new client, that is what we quote or estimate using.
Based off of.
But mm-hmm. we say because you've been so loyal with us, this is what we plan on charging you. The other thing we do for sales is, especially with long-term clients, is to really lock them down as a long-term client with a retainer.
Yeah.
So we tell them, hey, we're raising our rates, but if you sign with us with a retainer, you are going to get this better rate.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes things, I feel like when we spoke to that with our long-term clients, that framed the discussion in regards to, yes, we're raising the rates. Yes, you're going to be paying more, but we're still giving you preferential treatment.
Mm-hmm. We do something very similar for our long-term clients. And it comes up when we would have perhaps pitched them, would you like to sign a retainer for this year or this quarter or however it might be. Of course, you can still do work with us hourly. However, our hourly rate is X,
yes.
which is much higher than it would be if they were right. signing on to something. And we have set those up. It's been kind of a trial and error process, which, you know, not everything is. So that those for the retainers that we set up, we have, say someone's buying 40 hours for a quarter. If they use more than 40 hours in that quarter, it's still at that same rate. So mm-hmm. that's our preference for how we do retainers. I think people do them a little bit differently, but that's one of the common ways.
And I think a retainer is, you know, one of those things that aside from a way to talk about potentially raising rates, I think it's a good strategy, if you will, for taking a project, like when a project's done, after the appropriate amount of time, you know, that's natural for your established client relationship to bring up that conversation about a retainer. It's just part of your workflow to close out that project that you bring up a retainer as an option, you know, as a conversation aside from raising rates or anything like that.
Agreed.
So, Susan, in your bio on your website, I noticed that it says that you advocate for inclusion. And I wanted to know what that meant to you and if it plays any kind of role in how Q does marketing or sales or client relationships.
Thank you for asking about that. It's also one of those things that's challenging to talk about, but it's extremely important to me. I had previously thought that I would advocate for diversity. However, then I realized that was not actually, did not feel as complete and accurate as being interested in inclusion. And that is probably a longer conversation. So plays out in our marketing materials is that we are a values-focused company. And so it's important for those values and some of those being our team and our thoughtfulness and sharing our knowledge and those kinds of things to be part of who we are in our company internally and also how we work with clients. So I am a female and I'm in the tech world, so it's certainly easy for me to talk about it from that side of things, but I don't want that to just be about women in tech. I would rather mm-hmm. have that be about everybody in tech, whatever they might be, if they feel like they've been excluded by age or race or mm-hmm. whatever it might be. As far as that being in our marketing materials or attracting or having that connect with clients, it's there. It's not very in your face. However, if someone is truly interested in us and is thinking about, a client is thinking about working with us long term or really getting to know who we are, they would see that. And I think that would naturally attract or repel people that are interested in it or open to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it hasn't been very prominent, and we don't proactively seek clients that are only supportive of inclusion or diversity or women-owned businesses, although we love working with all of those types of businesses and organizations. It is not a requirement for our work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I particularly appreciate your point about if someone really wanted to get to know you, they could discover where you stand. And I think it speaks a bit, Leia, to brand. And one of the things Leia and I, you know, we feel very similar. In fact, our values seem to align very closely in terms of, you know, like we love working with women-owned businesses. We love working with organizations that promote education. That's one of our passions. But that's not exclusively what we do, and that's not the only type of work that we pursue. But we put that as our front forward in terms of all of our social media activities. It's reflected in our language of on our website. And, you know, like we're a certified women-owned business and, you know, we belong to a local chapter of the National Women Business Owners Association. So it's noticeable where some of our passions lie on our website, but our website really focuses on, you know, what we do and the services we provide and how we do those services. But I do think if you were to explore further, deeper into the website, but then also who we are online, you can really see the causes and the things that we care about. And I think that does suggest to someone immediately whether they'd want to work with us. If they have very different values from us, it wouldn't be some surprise on a phone call. And I think that's important, Leia. That's what brand is, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The immediate impression people have about who you are plays a role in whether they want to continue to work with you. And I think Susan's point over whether they're attracted or repelled is kind of like a natural thing when they see all of that out there. That being said, you know, at least for Bright Umbrella, we are trying to be more intentional about getting those particular clients, not overt, but just intentional. And I think that's like a different kind of angle, which means, for example, we are part of those organizations. So that means we can meet with other like-minded business people who we can potentially do their website.
Or meet people that they think we might be a useful resource for. Like it's sort of the long game or the 7 degrees of separation game.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of resources, Susan, can you recommend to help our listeners who want to foster better client relationships some links or books in regards to helping with long-term client relationships?
That is a great question. I mentioned that David Baker, who has the website Recourses, I have really learned a lot from him about client relationships, not necessarily long-term ones. And Blair Enns, whose website is Win Without Pitching, that is the focus of, if you're not familiar with it, of not doing RFPs and positioning yourself as an expert. It's a little bit less about client relationships, but it does change the dynamic of how you would engage with the client. So those are two that I have loved working with for or using and knowing for a long time. I think, well, the two of you are a great resource.
Thank you.
And along those lines, having a network of other business owners or business leaders is huge. As a business owner or co-owner, it's difficult. I mean, I have a team of employees and I love talking with them, but they are not the same as having people who have these same challenges that I do. And an event and a community that I got to be a part of just discovered about a year ago are the Bureau of Digital Events, if you're not familiar with those. They put on Owner Summit and Owner Camp, they're super awesome. And once you go to one, it's like this magical world of other people who are interested in sharing their knowledge and expertise and tons of other business owners and all kinds of web and digital everything. So great people.
Yeah, I think Owner Summit has been on our wish list for a couple years to be able to get the timing and the budget right.
Yes, I highly recommend it. Well, hopefully I'll see you there next time.
Yeah, fingers crossed next year if we can make that happen.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I know this is probably going to take us a little long, but you said something when you were mentioning the resources. I just have to ask this question. So you mentioned something like not doing RFPs. Does that mean you try and you don't respond to RFPs?
We very, very selectively respond to RFPs. I don't know the exact data, but it would, I think you could find it on the Win Without Pitching site, which is if you can affect the RFP process, say you're interested in that, and you can disrupt it, basically change it, your likelihood of winning that project, I believe, is 50% higher than if you just follow along the traditional RFP process and check off all the boxes and do all the work and then don't get the project. So we very rarely would reply to an RFP. Not that we never do. It would have to be a good fit for our skills and our interests and that we could be part of altering that process. So for example, right now we got an inquiry from someone in Boulder, which is, you know, right next door to Denver, who is interested in an expression engine site. And we did not want to have to do an RFP process, but because they're at a public university, they need to. Mm-hmm. And they said, would you please be interested enough to do this? We really are only going to invite a couple people. And so we will apply for that project, but it's pretty unusual. We only do it once or twice a year.
Man, I know that's like an episode in and of itself. We're going to have to do something about talking about that.
Yeah, for sure. So any final advice about developing and maintaining good long-term client relationships?
Yes. Two things I would say. One is to experiment with it and not necessarily in a bad way, but maybe in the, or I shouldn't say not necessarily in a bad way, but in an experimental way and be open to changing that. We've been at Q-Digital Studio, we've been working with clients for more than 10 years. So we've had a chance to practice it and refine it. And it takes time to get to know what is a good fit for us. Mm-hmm. So being willing to experiment and change and adapt and know that one size does not fit all clients, even if they're all long-term clients. And the other item would be that probably all of the listeners here already have a long-term client, whether or not they set out to have one or not. And it's a great way to look at that relationship and see what you like about it and think about expanding that or carrying that over to other clients where you'd like to nurture it.
Or even have that guide you as you look for new work.
Yes.
So that's all the time we have for today. But before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. Are you ready, Susan?
Yes.
Okay. First question. Introvert or extrovert?
Introvert.
All right. The power is going to be out for the next week. What food from the fridge do you eat first?
Ooh, that's a tough one. All the vegetables.
What's your favorite website for fun?
Medium.com. I don't know if it's super fun, but I love it.
What's the last thing you read?
Some trashy science fiction novel that I don't remember the name of.
What's the best piece of professional advice you've received?
It would have to be a bunch rolled into one, but be bold and be brave.
What about the worst advice you've received professionally?
You can't do something, basically.
What's your favorite color?
Green.
If you could take us to one restaurant in Denver, where would we go?
Ooh, good question. The first one that comes to mind is Bijou's Curry Shop, which is authentic Indian, and it has an awesome interior, and it's not expensive.
Perfect.
Awesome. What's your favorite board game?
The first one that came to mind is Monopoly.
Old school. Yeah. Always a classic. All right. Last question. Hulu or Netflix?
Netflix.
Definitive.
Very cool. So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you. This was so much fun.
Good. In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
I am on Twitter a lot at Susan Snipes. And my company's website is qdigitalstudio.com. I also have a personal website, susansnipes.com, which has a few other tidbits about me.
Awesome. Thanks again, Susan. This was a great conversation.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Leah.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsors. Many thanks to Fostermade and Wix.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and Devotee.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really like this episode, consider donating to the show. Links are in our show notes and on our site.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when Jack McDade returns to the show to talk about static content workflows. Be sure to check out controlclickcast.com/schedule for more upcoming topics.
This is Leia Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.